The Black Talk Media Project would like to invite you to become a member of the BTR Community subscription-based social media platform. BTR Community is a platform that was set up for the listening audience of Black Talk Radio Network, the number one independent Black radio network online. For just $24 per year, your subscription gives you access to an interactive space to share information with like-minded people with your privacy guaranteed. Your subscription will go a long way to help us maintain and improve our current media platforms. It will also help provide a budget so that we can begin the task of establishing localized media centers and radio stations across the United States. The best way to show your support and appreciation for what we do here at Black Talk Radio is to subscribe. Help us to help you be informed. Join BTRCommunity.com today.
The views and opinions expressed by callers, guests, and hosts do not necessarily reflect those of the Black Talk Radio Network and Black Talk Media Project. Black Talk Radio is new black media for the new millennium. Are tuned in to Black Talk Radio Network. My name is Scotty Reed, broadcasting from behind the enemy lines of USA Inc. And you might be surprised, but yes, I'm doing a live episode of BTR News tonight. That program, the live program, has been suspended so I could focus on other work behind the scenes and support some of our other radio hosts, as I pretty much engineer every program except for one that you hear on the network. But tonight I have a special guest, and I want to give a shout out to Brother Kwabena of the Clear the Airways Project. He has been a frequent guest on the program, but I've been knowing him for a number of years, ever since I became aware of the Clear the Airways Project, which seeks to clear the radio stations that target our communities, and I'm talking about the black community, with harmful messages through music. And so, you know, violence and misogyny has been hot topics in the nation. There's been a national conversation around violence, especially with all these school shootings. I mean, we just had a couple of them in the past couple of days. And then, of course, you know about the Me Too movement. You had Harvey Weinstein turn himself in on rape charges today. But that particular section of the entertainment industry in Hollywood has been the focus primarily of the Me Too movement and going after those people, Hollywood producers and other actors and whatnot. But they are ignoring the other entertainment that promotes just as much violence, promotes just as much misogyny, and we're talking about the music industry, especially if we're talking about hip-hop music, which has strayed very far from its roots. We still have some artists out there who unfortunately are not supported by these mainstream corporations, but they're still putting out good hip-hop music. But most of the hip-hop, aka rap music, that we hear coming out over these radio stations that's targeting our communities, it's mostly garbage. And it's promoting a lot of violence. It's promoting a lot of misogyny. It's just promoting a lot of bad behavior. So I will be talking to legendary radio personality Bob Law, who is also part of this movement to raise awareness about this harmful media that takes aim at our communities. And we just want to have a general discussion for the time that he's with us about the culture of violence in the USA, especially as it relates to its promotion to the black community through these radio stations, which, by the way, are supported by corporate America. You know, you like Brother Quabin always tells us, you know, when he listens to the radio stations coming out of Chicago, in between the slop hop or the killer music that we're hearing that we have a problem with, you'll hear commercials for McDonald's, you'll hear commercials for Walmart and all of these Fortune 500 companies. And you know, it's just been time for us to take back the airways, because we're talking about public airways. You know, Black Talk Radio is a digital platform, so that means we're internet based. This radio station is a digital radio station, internet based. So we're not talking about internet radio. We're not even talking about satellite radio where people have to pay, you know, for a subscription. We're talking about the radio stations who are licensed to operate on the public airways. For those that don't know, the radio frequencies in the United States are regulated by the federal government, primarily through the FCC, which has its own rules against obscenity in, you know, music and what can go out over these airways and what times that more adult content is appropriate to put on the airways, because it's supposed to be about protecting our young minds out there that are still being shaped. But unfortunately, the FCC has not enforced those rules in a very, very long time. Now, after we speak with Mr. Bob Law, I want to open up the phone lines for an open dialogue on the real legacy of Malcolm X, which is very complex, and his views did vary and change over the years just prior to his assassination by men who were members of the Nation of Islam and likely also agents of COINTELPRO or simply just religious fanatics who have remained silent about the plot they were involved in to kill one of the most influential people in the world during his time. You know, Malcolm X's birthday was May the 19th, which was earlier this week. And unfortunately, so many people in our community, instead of celebrating his legacy and his sacrifice, you know, they were caught up in that so-called royal wedding, which is, you know, I'm not going to criticize anybody who watched that. I understand how especially women get caught up in these fairy tale weddings and things of that nature, but I just, you know, have to acknowledge that a lot of black people forgot it was Malcolm X's birthday because they were so distracted by this royal wedding. So let me check my board and see if we have Mr. Bob Law joining us. I may have to put in another call to him and get him on the line. Let me go ahead and do that. I've been having some problems with my board, so let me go ahead and put his number in there once again and see if we can get him on the line. Okay, so while I wait to connect to Mr. Bob Law, I want to pull up this article, and let me go ahead and copy and paste that article to our chat room. By the way, man, I just jumped right into it, didn't I? Please continue to support the production of independent media, especially independent black media, because, you know, Bob Law has talked about in the past, he's a legendary radio personality, talked about the impending death of black radio. And the reason that the Black Talk Media Project was created was because I recognized this as well. But I also recognized, you know, the power of media and how it can be a tool to be used in not just our education, but in our liberation. So please, if you find our mission worthy, Please make a donation of any amount to our nonprofit Black Talk Media Project. And you can go to blacktalkradionetwork.com. If you scroll all the way to the bottom of the site, you'll see a link where you can make a donation via our PayPal account, or you can also go to blacktalkmediaproject.org. If you would like to send a check or money order, just make it out to Black Talk Media Project, P.O. Box 65, Mount Holly, North Carolina, 28120. Again, that's Black Talk Media Project, P.O. Box 65, Mount Holly, North Carolina, 28120. So let me post this because I was talking to Brother Kwabena earlier today, and he brought this to my attention, this article. Pulitzer Prize winning musician Wynton Marsalis, who has produced a lot of jazz music and what have you, legendary, I think the proper word for it would be trumpeter. I know he plays the trumpet. He plays other instruments as well, but that's the main instrument that he is known for. But he made some comments concerning hip-hop, okay? And I posted the article in our chat room, which you can find at uberconference.com/Black Talk Radio. That's uberconference.com/Black Talk Radio Network. And let me go ahead and pull up the article myself as I just posted it there for you. By the way, if you have any questions or comments, you can chime in by giving us a call at 704-802-5056. That's 704-802-5056. Hit ** to unmute yourself. Just please watch your background noise. I'll notice that you've unmuted yourself on the board, and we'll get to you. Now, there's a number of publications who have written about Wynton Marsalis' comments about rap being more damaging than a statue of Robert E. Lee. Now, I have to admit, when I first saw the headlines and a couple of excerpts, I didn't really pull up the article, and I was saying to myself, come on, Wynton, you know, we cannot diminish the propaganda value of these white supremacist monuments to slavers and racists and what have, because it has an impact. You know, we don't want to minimize that. So I took a look at his comments in full, and I see where he's coming from. Okay, because, you know, a lot of these radio stations that are targeting us with this harmful form of media, this harmful rap music, they're not in the Deep South, or they're in cities that may not have these statues and what have you. And so I get what he's saying when he says that, you know, it's more damaging than a statue of Robert E. Lee. He's not minimizing the impact of racist symbology or anything like that. He's just saying what's directly impacting us, in his opinion, is these harmful messages that are targeting our youth, okay? And even some of our adults, as Wynton Marsalis said, it's like the adults have left the room, you know, and nobody's being the adult in the room when it comes to acknowledging the damage that this type of music is doing. Okay, let me check my phone line. I may have to reach out to Brother Kwabena again, as I'm not seeing Brother Bob Law on the board. But hey, as they say, the show must go on whether we have the guests or not. So we might as well just go ahead and jump into this conversation. So this is coming to you from StereoGum.com. Wynton Marsalis says rap is more damaging than a statue to Robert E. Lee. Wynton Marsalis is a trumpeter, composer, and Pulitzer Prize winner. He's also built himself a longtime reputation as a jazz purist, one who refuses to integrate music like avant-garde jazz or fusion into his work, which is otherwise immersed in the genre's history. But Marcellus views rap music as a whole lot darker than his ideals about whatever forms of jazz he doesn't like, as the Washington Post reports. I don't read the Washington Post. I don't like the Washington Post. It is a very biased, politically biased website, and I just don't trust the Washington Post, you know. But again, I don't really trust any media. We read these things and you know, we form our opinions based off of what we know. But I'm not going to pull up the Washington Post article. But it says, talking to Marcellus on his Post podcast, Jonathan Capehart asked about playing jazz during a time of massive racial unrest like what we're seeing today. Marcellus responded that racism has less to do with the Charlottesville attack or even with Donald Trump's election, and more to do with how we've lost our grip on our morality in the black community, using pornography and profanity and addressing ourselves in the lowest, most disrespectful form. Now, see, again, I don't agree with that. I don't agree with that. And again, you know, if you would like to chime in, just give us a call, 704-802-5056. I don't think that race, I don't agree with his statement that racism has less to do with racist terrorism or with Donald Trump's election. That's a problem. All right. And although it was a white woman who lost her life, there was also a black man, a young black man, who was viciously attacked in Charlottesville by these racists and what have you. They almost beat the man to death, and I'm sure they would have if not for other people intervening. So anything that's minimizing the impact of racism, I'm not going to agree with that. And I don't agree with Marcellus on that point. But I do agree with him that it does seem like we've lost our grip on our morality in the black community. And I do agree with him that a lot of this music and its accompanying videos are very pornographic in nature and laced with profanity. And you know, I ain't got a problem with somebody using a cuss word here or there. I really don't. You know, I'm not that kind of sensitive guy, although, you know, I try not to, you know, allow that type of language on this network and try to keep it family friendly as possible. But some of the music I'll share, there'll be a cuss word here or there, but it is not profanity, you know, laced and what have you. And there is a problem with us addressing ourselves in the lowest and most disrespectful form, you know, and also just the disrespect that is shown to black women and the disrespect that is just shown to us as a people. It's a form of lack of black self-respect. Now, I also don't buy into changing the word nigger to say it's nigger and nigger made. I don't know. I'm not going to go through all those mental gymnastics and what have you. As a youth, I used to say the word, but I don't use it anymore. I've grown older. I've hopefully grown wiser, and it's just not a part of my vocabulary anymore. But I do see the harmful impact of it. For example, you just had one of these artists, I think it was Kendrick Lamar. Now, he's using the word nigga in his song. And so when one of his fans, who happens to be white, starts reciting the lyrics to his song and says nigga, then he got a problem with it. But look, these the people that's buying your records. These the people that is paying for tickets to get into your concert. These are your benefactors, you know, and so why you gonna get mad at her for saying something that you said? If you got a problem with other people using the word, then don't use it yourself. Don't put that out there into the universe. So, you know, I don't want to make it a debate about the N-word, but I'm saying that, look, we can do without using that word. Is it absolutely necessary? Let's refer to each other as gods, or, you know, I don't want to get into idolatry or anything like that, but let's refer to each other as warriors okay, as soldiers, as brothers and sisters, without, you know, calling each other niggas and whatnot and trying to justify it, saying we don't mean it in the same way, but then we get mad when white people, you know, sing along to these lyrics. It's just not logical to me. All right. So anyway, I don't agree with Marcellus on lessening the impact of white supremacist symbology. That has everything to do with racism. All right. But at the same time, we can check ourselves and acknowledge the truth. And if we're talking about the music, yes, we are promoting a lot of immorality. We're promoting date rape. We're promoting black on black crime when we talk about shooting niggas in the face and what have you, as some of these lyrics talk about. And it is very disrespectful to our community. It's disrespectful to the memory of our ancestors. So he's broadly talking in about rap music. He goes on to further clarify, he's not talking about all rap music, because as I stated, we do have a few brothers and sisters out there who are putting out some positive, uplifting, and educational rap music, and are staying true to the roots of the culture of hip hop. Now he says, Wynt Marcellus says, you can't have a pipeline of filth be your default position and it's free. Now the nation is entertained by that. It's not free. Just like the toll the minstrel show took on black folks and on white folks. Now all this nigga this, bitch that, hold that, is just a fact at this point. For me, it was not a default position in the 80s. Now that is the default position. How you like me now? You like what it's yielding? Something is wrong with you. You need your head examined if you like this. It's almost like adults left the room or something. I do not like rap, and it doesn't matter that I don't like it, and I recognize that, but I'm from the civil rights movement. I was called a nigger, and I'm not talking about in my neighborhood, which, of course, that went on. I'm talking about, for me, I don't like the fact the drums going away. I don't mind the computers. They're fine, but they can't replace the people. There's a movement now to drag public music education down into that. It's almost comical to me. Now, the link that I posted to, it has the podcast that's embedded in the article. So it's like an hour long podcast, and you can check that out if you choose to. Now, he does, when he was asked, he did praise Childish Gambino's, which I think that guy's name is Donald Glover, This Is America. And he also downplays Kanye West's embrace of Trump. All right, without further delay, I think we do have our scheduled guest on, Mr. Bob Law. Mr. Law, do we have you on the line, sir?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yes, we hear you loud and clear. Thank you for joining us tonight.
Okay. Oh, thank you for having me. I think you all tried to reach me, and I get a few calls from, say, no name, an unknown caller. I wasn't aware that it was you.
Okay, I'm sorry. I'll have to check into that. Our board should not be showing up as an unnamed caller. The service we use, it does have phone numbers, so I'll look into that, as we've been having some technical issues. But I'm glad that we were able to connect with you before we went off air tonight. So, Mr. Law, as I have stated to the audience, you're a legendary radio personality, and you know, you have taken it upon yourself in recent years to become part of this movement to raise awareness about the harmful music that's coming out over, and I hesitate to say black radio stations, because many of these radio stations are not black owned. A few of them are, but a lot of them are owned by corporations like Clear Channel, and they program their playlists with all of this harmful music. So I just want to acknowledge and thank you, you know, for picking up on this area and helping us to raise awareness about it.
Mm-hmm. Yes, sir. Well, thank you. and for what you do to give us a platform to be able to raise these issues. See, one of the things when you mention those corporations who now own the mega corporations own all of the radio stations, they own these corporations, Clear Channel or now iHeart, Viacom, whoever it is, they own black and white music radio stations. They own the hip hop radio stations. And if you when you listen to the music that is selected for each of the stations, we discover that the music that they program that targets white audiences is much different than the music that targets black audiences. And when they point out that white people buy more of the music than black people, I don't know if that's really true, but that's what they say. But the point is that the adults who control the industry offer their children music that they would have them listen to, which is softer, lighthearted. Even the hip-hop, in New York City, it's Z100. On satellite radio, there's a thing called Kids Bop, something like that. If you listen to the music is so much different. They don't curse. They don't denigrate the women. They save all of that for black audiences. And that is, our concern is not just that they save the worst for us. That's part of their historical tradition. But our concern is the black people who make excuses for it, who tolerate it, who cooperate with it, and continue to expose our young. When you look at these groups, these black artists, hip-hop artists, when you look at what they say, when you look at what they look like, and they've been told that they have to be mean, sinister, and ugly, mm-hmm. in order to be a hip hop a rapper. But when you listen to their use of the N word, for instance, the way that they characterize women, and they use the N word all of the time, and they call them bees and hoes and talk about walking them around on leashes and doing all kinds of things that make it clear that they have absolutely no regard for black women. But one of the reasons that they use the N-word so repeatedly, because you know there's been long discussions and debates where people have made it clear that the majority population in the black community does not approve of the N-word, but they continue to use it until we began to understand. You know, the reason that they continue to use it is because they have to reassure their white managers, their white overseers, their white owners. They have to reassure the white people who own them and market and control their careers. They have to reassure those whites that they're not talking about their daughters, that they're talking about our daughters. They want to make it clear. When the group, the Migos, uses the kind of language they do in talking about women, they want to make it clear to that white guy who is their manager that they're not talking about his children. They're not talking about his daughter. They're talking about our daughters. And we begin to understand how sinister their cooperation with the process that characterizes black people as being worthless and dysfunctional and thugs and killers, they call it gangster. They have been tricked into a value system that says that what is strong and worthy is gangster. And so there's a lot of work to be done on renewing the minds of our people.
You know, I was just before you joined us, just reading a little bit about Wynton Marsalis' comments, where he says that, you know, this music is more harmful than statutes of Robert E. Lee. Now, I don't agree with everything he said in terms of white supremacist symbology and what have you. I think they're equally damaging. But he also stated that he started noticing a change in the music of hip-hop back in the mid to late 1980s. Would you say that that's an accurate assessment? You know, I'm in my 50s. I was in elementary school during the birth of hip hop, but I'm a hip hop head, and I noticed it during that same period of the 80s. This more violent content, this more misogynistic content. Have you observed the same thing along that time period?
Yeah, absolutely. It was Chuck D who called me to say, here, look at this. Listen to the changes. Look at this. He showed me the cover of hip-hop music magazines. There's one we used to be called XXL, I believe, or XX. There was a couple of them. And he said, look at the pictures of the black rappers on the cover of the magazine, and look at the pictures of the white rappers. And the black rappers got a screw face on and look mean and look like they're trying to scare somebody, and then have the audacity to say to adult, you shouldn't be afraid of your own children. That was their fallback line at that time. You shouldn't be afraid of your own children. You say, yeah, but look at you. You're deliberately trying to scare and terrorize the elders in our community. But the Wynton Marcellus statement, what is correct is that this music is doing more harm. It is doing more harm than the symbolism of the Confederacy. The symbolism of the Confederacy helps reinforce some arrogant, ignorant ideas about black and white people in America. But the music is actually instructing our own young people, and some of them are not so old, to actually go out and kill each other.
Right.
And see, what he is trying to say, and I don't know if that's what he was trying to say, but what I'm trying to say is, you've got to put the emphasis where it is necessary. This music is so bad, you can't tolerate the very real consequences, can't play down the consequences of this music. This music is as bad as any assault on black people, because it is programming black people, it is programming young black people with a sense of absolute despair. See, that's not what music does. It's not what art does. Art gives you a greater sense of possibility. You know, art helps you to envision what you can be. You don't engage in an art form to simply reflect the despair of the moment. That's not the function of art in the world historically. That's why people who have inspired liberation struggles around the world have been artists. They have been poets. And the black arts, the black consciousness movement in this country was fired up, and the architects of that movement were Professor Larry Neal, a poet, Hakeem Adabuti, and Amiri Baraka, and Sonia Sanchez,
poets,
and any number of people who were poets and artists and could give us a greater sense of what we can be. That's what art does. Art, it's a whole other discussion about the power and significance of art. But to misuse it, to not use it correctly, see, is a betrayal of the art form, and it is a betrayal of the interest of your people. And particularly if you're using it as a weapon to self-destruct. So if he's talking about how everybody was really upset, and they're willing to, see, here's what, they're upset, and they're willing to take the statue down, but they're not upset and are not willing to stay out of McDonald's, because McDonald's is the primary sponsor of the radio stations that are promoting this ratchet music. They will applaud and say, let's take the statue down, and I say, yes, we should take the statue down. But don't think that when you take the statue down, you have struck a blow for liberation. Don't claim any easy victories. And if you take the statue down, but we can't get iHeart to make adjustments to their music format, and we can't get McDonald's to make adjustments to the stations that they spend money promoting or supporting. But they'll take the statue down, and I believe that's what Wynton Marsalis is saying, and at least that's what he should be saying about the when we look at the damage. See, in his statement, I hear you, though, because when I read his statement, he did make his argument in a way that sounded like he was saying the real problem is black people.
Right, you know, right. But he did clarify it later.
That's why you have to make those statements. You know, Wynton is very, very good. He knows what he's talking about in terms of music. Politics is another thing. Understanding the social construct in this country is something else. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, Mr. Law, I do understand the angle that he's saying that this destructive media that's being aimed at our communities is more prevalent than these statutes. So he's not saying they don't have a harmful impact on our society, but if we're talking about our own communities, I do understand, as you just explained it, a lot of us will rally around, as we should, in taking down these statues. But when it comes to taking off this harmful, misogynistic, killer music, then we want to debate with each other about, freedom of speech and all this and that. So I do understand that aspect of it. And he did go ahead and make a Facebook post to clarify his statements. And he says, and he does put the onus on the people who control the music industry, because he talks about, a number of hip hop musicians have gone on record saying that the marketplace and the industry encourages them to make their material more commercial by adding violent and profanity-laced, materialistic, and over-the-top stereotypical images and concepts to their work.
Mm-hmm. Yep, and see, again, it is important to articulate the issue correctly. Like they used to say to Malcolm, make it plain, Brother Minister, make it plain. That's what we need even now. See, the industry might use the term like, we want you to make your music more commercial, so do this. It's not true. Mm-hmm. The industry is part of the white supremacist social construct, the entertainment industry. The industry says that we want you to produce a product that will undermine, that will damage the very psyche of black people, because we saw what happened when Gamble and Huff ruled. You know, we saw what happened when Curtis Mayfield ruled. We saw what happened with the music, when the messages. We saw what. We've been telling you for decades and decades that you were black and ugly, and you bought it. You were wearing blonde wigs. You were doing all kind of stuff. You were talking about how you put a premium on being light-skinned. We had absolutely controlled your minds and your perception of yourself. And then people started talking about, I'm black and I'm proud. Then you all started talking about, I'm black and I'm beautiful. And as we have been working on you for decades, and then James Brown said, say it loud, and y'all said it loud all over the world. We don't ever want to see that happen again. We understand the power and significance of music. We understand the power and significance of art. We understand it better than you Negroes understand it. So Negroes, here's what we want you to do. And that is the reason. It's not as simple as they want them to be commercial so they can sell the product. We was having the black consumer will buy whatever product they put on the shelf. That it doesn't have to have any extra violence, extra nudity, extra cursing. Doesn't have to have that. They'll buy whatever. We had there's a sister who produced a wonderful little doll back in the day called the Huggy Bean doll. Pretty little black doll, had nice little outfits and stuff, and a major department store downtown Brooklyn, Abraham and Strauss, everybody called it A&S department store. They wouldn't put it on the shelf, wouldn't sell it. And so we went there, delegation went there, we're telling them, almost all your customers are black, and you got to do it, you got to do it. And so we put applying some pressure. We're going to boycott and picket the store. So they said, you know, we'll try it. And then in the conversation, somebody said, you know, I don't know why you don't want to do it. This is even manufactured by a black manufacturer. The white woman said, "Miss, I don't care if the manufacturer is black. Black people buy whatever we put on the shelf. Y'all don't care if she's black either. Black people buy whatever we put on the shelf," and that's still true. When you look at McDonald's, McDonald's has been, it has been promoted or pointed out all over the world through social media that the food is toxic. Black folk flock into McDonald's regularly anyway, whatever they put on the shelf. So they're not doing it because unless they curse and unless they included that toxic content, they're pretending that unless they do that, black people won't buy it. That's not true. We'll buy every. And not only that, we've already proven that we have a broad taste. You know, there are black people who like hip-hop and R&B and blues. You know, we have demonstrated that there's not any one single music that we love anyway. But what white supremacy noticed was that not only that do we love the music, but what was happening back in the day was that the music loved us. Now they need a music that hates us and let us in. So it's not that they're told to do this because that's what you have to do in order to sell. That's what you have to do in order to accomplish their political agenda, and that is to suppress and crush the very spirit of black people. But the artists don't understand that. Mm-hmm. And that's why we appreciate this opportunity to lay that out.
You know, right now, over the past year and a half, there is what's called this Time's Up movement and this Me Too movement, which is rightly taking aim at misogynistic sexual harassment, you know, these negative behaviors towards women. But that movement has mainly been focused on Hollywood producers and directors and other actors and whatnot. I'm just wondering why this music has not come into their purview. Now, I know that R. Kelly right now is the target of Mute R. Kelly hashtag by some sisters and whatnot, but that's more for his alleged behavior towards women, you know, in his personal life than it is his music. But why do you think that, you know, this is being ignored in terms of our community? And that's a rhetorical question, you know, because you just really talked about it. But I mean, the activists, though, is it that they don't know the harmful impact of this music, or they just purposely ignoring it?
Yeah, well, it could be that the activists are just square, you know, they're older and are just. Have always taken a position that during the heyday of black music consciousness, the activists always took the position that they were too sophisticated, too politically astute and sophisticated to know anything about music. That they will listen to some pure jazz, straight ahead jazz, but if you say somebody wants to do a fundraiser, I'd be in meetings and somebody wants to do a fundraiser and they say, maybe we can get Wilson Pickett to do the fundraiser. The activists say, "Who's that?" Well, if you say he's popular, okay, I'd have to ask my kids about that because I don't know nothing about that stuff. That was their elitist position, and they may still be operating from that same position and just not at all aware of what the music is saying. But more so though, as I said. Music has, the reason that the music has not come under attack by Me Too movement, the women's movement, other movements that are dealing with sexual harassment, is because those movements are also part of the white supremacist social construct. those movements are also part of the effort to displace black people, and particularly black men, in the trajectory toward power. There are people who clearly understand the significance of music on the mind. They understand the neurons of the, how the neurons in the mind are affected by music. They know that what we're saying is where the target really is. It is not their intention to bring attention to the real problem, the real issue in this society. The killings on the school campuses, the high school campuses, are what the media calls the worthy victims. Worthy victims get coverage. The killings on the street in Chicago, 700, and most of them black, those are unworthy victims. They are not worthy of coverage. They are not worthy of attention.
When it is covered, Mr. Law, understand how
many people are being killed. Mm-hmm. I heard a young white student who is one of the student organizers, high school student organizers, being interviewed on MSNBC, I believe, and he said the same thing. He said that these shootings are now get coverage because of where they take place. Mm-hmm. But far more people are being killed regularly in cities like Chicago and Washington, D.C., and that is being ignored. And see, and that's where we should be fired up about that, and we are not, because it is not the intention of the groups who are pressing for against sexual harassment. It's not their intention to deal with the larger, more devastating issue, because there are issues that are more devastating to black people than sexual harassment. The killing of black people, the three-year-old child, little black child, who was killed on Easter Sunday morning in a drive-by in Atlanta. That's more devastating. And before that, there's a guy, somebody called 21 Savage, who has a record that talks about shooting, and I got 1, 2, 3, 4, I got 5, 6, 7, I got 8 people, shooters lined up to spray your whole neighborhood. I don't go for none of that rah-rah stuff. He didn't say stuff. And, you know, I will shoot. I don't give a F who I hit. Mm-hmm. And then a couple of weeks later, somebody in a drive-by shooting who didn't give a F who he hit killed one of our babies. That's more devastating for me. And if it was the only thing, if that was all, you know, just that one child, okay. But we need to deal with it. But I'm looking at 700 people killed in 1 year in Chicago.
And then you turn on the radio station,
looking at the same kind of numbers in Washington, D.C. That's more devastating for me. And my concern is those movements that try to displace the core concerns of the black community and of black people to a race-neutral issue. And we are not for sexual harassment, but I know that men and women engage in sexual harassment. It's not just men doing this stuff. Men and women. We don't condone the improper or immoral attitude or behavior of anyone, male or female. I know that it is men and women bringing drugs to the party. I know very well that it's men and women who are engaging in immoral, illicit behavior in order to advance their careers. I know that, and so does everybody else. If we're going to raise it, see, but what I'm saying is that we cannot afford to have issues raised that become a distraction to the core issue of the absolute displacement of black people in this society.
Mr. Law, we do have a caller who would like to ask a question. We got Brother Jerry, who's calling us from Tennessee. Brother Jerry, did you have a question or a comment for Mr. Bob Law, our guest tonight, in a little bit of time we have remaining?
Greetings. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. Yes. Just here recently, you was talking about the conscious actions of the musicians. And my question to you is, here recently, Kendrick Lamar, one of the more what we would call conscious rappers out today, he had he invited a white woman up on a stage, and she yelled out "nigger," and he stopped the show. Do you think that was a good act, and what else could be done to keep that from happening in the future?
Brother Jerry,
thank you, and I put myself on mute.
Yeah, Brother Jerry, for clarification, she actually was citing the lyrics to his song, and that's what he got mad at when she used the N-word. Brother Law?
Yes, what is the question? Do I think that he was correct to stop her?
For stopping the show, because like what Brother Scotty said, is that she was citing words from his lyrics, but she didn't edit out the word "nigger," and he stopped the show because of that. And do you think that that was a good way to facilitate that particular situation? And what do you think? What do you think should be done as far as the entertainers in the future? Because I mean, I have my own thoughts about it, but I would like to hear yours. And I put myself on mute. Thank you for your time.
All right. I think that it was appropriate for him to stop it, to make it clear that he was offended by her using it. I think that she was correct when she challenged him, said, "This is. What am I not?" Whatever she said, I'm not soulful enough or something. I'm not gangster enough. He's part of a process that promotes a dysfunctional, corrupt value system. And you can't live within the context of a corrupt value system and pick and choose at your leisure certain kinds of behavior. You have to be consistent. I think that he was right to say that there's something wrong with this. It was almost like a realization on his part. Maybe it was a realization that what I'm engaged in is wrong. He was saying, as I understood it, that only black people have the right to use a term to describe blacks in a state of wretchedness. I don't agree with anybody using it. I don't think that she should have used it. I don't think that he should use it. And I think that moving forward, what entertainers have to do is stop using the word. But as I said earlier, they are afraid to stop using the word because the whites who own their lives, the whites who package their careers, have to be reassured that these entertainers are helping to teach black people to hate each other. See, this music that these people perform hates black women. You can't find one that has the same sentiment and talks with the same understanding as Bill Withers' "Grandma's Hands." Find one that understands grandma. You know, find what you get instead is this guy Tyler Perry dressing up like a woman and what's his character's name is
Madea,
whatever her name is. There's the whites who own this industry are saying this is what we want from you, and it will take our artists with a lot of it'll take courage for black artists to stop using the N-word and making excuses for it and trying to pretend that it has some relevance or that you can say it with affection, right? "Oh, you my nigga," like that's different. I think they even say there's a way you can spell it. If you want to come up with a word that expresses endearment, why not look for a word from the Yoruba culture? Why not look for a Swahili word? You know, why not look for a word from our own legacy, as opposed to a word that was created by people who hate us to describe us in a state of wretchedness? See, that whole argument in support of the word is flawed and contradictory. But it's going to take courage to stop using the word. And I don't know that any of these Negro rappers have that kind of integrity and courage. Because, see, that's really system challenging. System has made it clear that in order to be a success, this is what we want you to do. This is how we want you to do harm to your own people. And as long as you're doing harm to your own people, you can make big money. We're not really worried about how much money y'all make, because you're not going to ever use any of that money to build a black institution. You're not going to put it in a black college. You know, you're not going to give it to any black institutions. You're not going to build housing development. You're not going to become involved in anything that is in the interest of your people. You're not going to create a micro business loan fund connected to some black banks. We ain't even worried about how much money Jay-Z and Beyonce and whoever else makes. We don't care. You can make all the money you want, because you're not going to do anything with that money that is system challenging. But if you attack the mindset of our people, see, if you do something that increases college enrollment, like the Different World TV show, now we got a problem with that. See, if you do something that changes how black people perceive and feel about themselves, and you do something that is empowering, then we have a problem with that. Now, if you want to just do some things that keeps denigrating black women and calling them all kinds of names and just talking about them in a demeaning way, that's cool. And then you also want to encourage black people to kill each other. We're down with that. We'll pay you big money for that, because we have big money. You know, the Rolling Stones perform. All of the Rolling Stones are in their 70s. You know, but when the Rolling Stones perform, they make $10 million a night. They do $10 million per concert, and they only do concerts. So they do $10 million per concert. These folk have plenty of money. We don't care if Jay-Z has that much money, as long as he don't try to build no black bank. And so it takes a different kind of courage to challenge white supremacy.
We have one more caller, as we have a few more minutes with Mr. Bob Law. And thank you again, sir, for joining us tonight. Otis, go ahead with your question or comment, please. Otis calling us from the state of Virginia. Go ahead with your question or comment for Mr. Law.
How you doing, Mr. Law? I'm going to try not to spend all my time giving you congratulations. Say it loud. I know I saw it 6-7 years ago. I want to try to delve into it, because I know you're knowledgeable of this. Have you ever had any contact with people like this supposed to be professed billionaire Byron Allen, who's buying up TV stations and all of that? Because I found out from a Jared Ball interview, there's basically two major Jewish guys, Grange and Cohen, that control these rappers and specify what they say, and have even paid to have contracts with some of them and shelved their career because they won't go along with the trash that's being out there. But with your talent, and I know your expertise, do any of these black people try to work with you?
No, but I got lost in there a little bit. Oh, you were saying the black millionaires, billionaires?
The billionaires, and especially like Byron Allen, because
I've not seen them. No, I've not seen them engage in any political activity. Again, the answer is no. They have a different agenda. They're about making money, and they're making money. As far as we know, they're making money, and that is how they see doing. See, there are black people who feel that what you can do for the best thing you can do for black people is to show white people that black people are trustworthy. So they set out to do that. They feel like if I show up and work every day and do an excellent job, the next black person who comes along might get a job. While in my job, I'm not going to do anything to help black people. I'm not going to do anything to bring another person into the firm or cut anybody else in on any of the things that we are doing. I'm not doing that. But what I will do is I will work very hard for the man. And so that when the next black person does come along, he can say, well, you know, this other guy, he did such a good job. I'm willing to trust another black person. There are people who think that that is the way that they should struggle. And it's a unique response from black people. Other people get in, and as soon as they get in, they start pulling other members of their group along.
So I guess basically what you're saying is they don't understand that wealth is actually a community thing, and it won't do much good for the people for one-off billionaires when you're looking at another 40 million
people. It's not so much that they don't understand. They don't care. They don't care about wealth and the community.
I was just going to say, I can remember watching that you're Say It Loud with some friends of mine. I'm 64 years old, and we were convinced that you would probably be where Tyler Perry was, and now the reality of what's happening tells me why you're not there. Much respect.
All right, now, thank you.
Well, again, I want to thank you again, Mr. Law, for the work that you are engaged in and the sacrifices that you have made for the upliftment of our community and our people all over the planet. Do you have any final comments? And if there's any websites, any information that you would like our audience to be apprised of, if you could provide that information, how people can reach out to you.
Well, we now have a website and email and everything, and I don't have it in front of me ever. I need to tape it to my forehead. The National Black Leadership Alliance, and if people can just Google the National Black Leadership Alliance, and that should take you to our website. And looking for something more specific, but that is cool. I mean, but that'll take you to our website, and that is where we have information, a lot of the things that we're talking about, and on that website there's also an email address that people can be in touch with the National Black Leadership Alliance. We would like to hear from them. There's also the Clear the Airwaves project on Facebook, and that you can also go to. That's very much, and they are very much a part of what we are doing. But just Google the National Black Leadership Alliance, and that will take them to our information.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. And I'll post those links in our program description for tonight for those that will listen to the podcast later. But you are correct. You just type in National Black Leadership Alliance. The YouTube channel will come up, as well as the Twitter account and the website. All right. Well, I don't want to keep you any longer. Thank you again for the work that you and others are engaged in and trying to uplift our community and just, you know, spread awareness about the harmful impact of this media, because Malcolm X, who, you know, we'll be talking about later, and we celebrated his birthday this week, he said media is the most powerful entity on the face of the planet. Now, I know he was talking about news media, but we can apply that to all forms of media. And so, you know, it is definitely.
All right, now, thank you very much for having me. Thank you.
All right, Mr. Law, you have a good evening, sir.
All right, now, thank you. You too.
Okay, we are going to take a station identification break, play some music, and then when we come back, I want to get into an open dialogue about the maturation of Malcolm X, his legacy. Now, the reason that I wanted to have this conversation is I was having a Twitter conversation with this guy on Twitter, obviously, and he was talking about Malcolm X and saying the mission of the Organization for African American Unity was a black separatist organization. And I told the young brother that, no, you're mistaken. I said, now, you know, and I also see a lot of people who love to share speeches and what have you when Malcolm X, as he said himself, was following the ideology of Elijah Muhammad, but they don't recognize Malcolm developed his own ideology after his split with the NOI, and he founded the Organization for African American Unity along with Dr. John Henry Clark. And, you know, he talked about a number of issues Malcolm X did in terms of global oppression. Of course, he was most concerned with the oppression of black people, and he was trying to build alliances with our African brothers and sisters and Afro-descendant people wherever they were around the world so that we could work together collectively to confront this global oppression that we're facing. So that's why I want to talk about it, because a lot of us ignore the maturation of Malcolm X or the transformation of his views once he came into, and again, I'm quoting Malcolm, once he came into his own mind and formed his own ideologies based off of experiences that he had, specifically when he went on his Hajj, which is the pilgrimage that all Muslims should try to make at least once in their lifetime. And from that experience, he just took on a different worldview. And so, you know, we'll be sharing some quotes and just, you know, looking at how some of the things he spoke about are around today, how they impact us today. You know, right now, I am concerned about what the Palestinians are going through, especially, you know, the young people who are engaging in this nonviolent march of return to their homeland that their grandparents or parents were displaced from, and they're just being shot down like, you know, their lives don't matter whatsoever by these cowardly Israeli soldiers on the orders of their government. And so, you know, Malcolm X talked about Zionism is a form of racism and what have you. So we will, of course, I want this to be an open dialogue, and anybody who has any questions or comments on the legacy of Malcolm is certainly welcome to ask those questions and share those comments. But I'm going to take a station identification break right now, and then we will come back and discuss some of that. You're listening to Black Talk Radio News, which is podcasted here on the Black Talk Radio Network. We'll be back after these messages.
Hi, the Black Talk Media Project would like to invite you to become a member of the BTR Community subscription-based social media platform. BTR Community is a platform that was set up for the listening audience of Black Talk Radio Network, the number one independent black radio network online. For just $24 per year, your subscription gives you access to an interactive space to share information with like-minded people with your privacy guaranteed. Your subscription will go a long way to help us maintain and improve our current media platforms. It will also help provide a budget so that we can begin the task of establishing localized media centers and radio stations across the United States. The best way to show your support and appreciation for what we do here at Black Talk Radio is to subscribe. Help us to help you be informed. Join BTRCommunity.com today.
Make Black Talk Radio your choice for digital black radio. New black media for the new millennium.
Don't believe the hype. never said before. See the brothers pull the trouble, hit the busted bubble, cause we rumble from our lower level. To condition your condition, we're gonna do a song that you never heard before. Make it all jump along to the education. Brothers gotta work it out and stop chasing. In the street all willing to work it out. Come on, y'all, let's go to work. So many of us in limbo, how to get it on? It's quite simple, three stones from the sun. We need a piece of this rock. Indestructible soul. Answers to this prison, to the brothers in the street.
School
and the prison. History shouldn't be a mystery. Our story's real history, not
this.
We're gonna work it out one day till we all
get paid
the right way in full. No bull talking, no walking, driving, arriving, and styling. Tell them soon you'll see what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
One day the brothers gonna work it out.
Fight.
rhymes with tales of death or lies. Designed to fill your mind now that you realize the prize arrives. We got the pump and stuff to make you tough. From the heart, it's a start, a work of art to revolutionize. Make a change, thus it's strange. People, people, we all the same. No, we're not the same, cause we don't know the game. What we need is awareness. We can't get careless. You say, what is this? My beloved, let's get down to business. Mental self-defense of fitness. Don't rest the show.
Tuned in to the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts and live program scheduling, visit us on the web at blacktalkradionetwork.com. And welcome back to BTR News during this rare live broadcast. Again, I'm more into podcasting so that I could spend some time taking care of some other things, trying to, you know, ensure the survival of this radio network in our organization. I want to go ahead and change gears. And again, I want to thank Mr. Bob Law for joining us tonight and for those who called in and added to the dialogue. But I want to change gears again. Malcolm X, a person who I believe, you know, I did not even become aware of, except for through Public Enemy, who we just got through listening to some of their music. You know, I was in my 20s when Public Enemy was at their height, and they exposed me to some things that I probably wouldn't have been exposed to if not for their music. So again, talking about the power of media, and that led me to explore the life of Malcolm X, and whose biography I read, I believe I was like 22 or 23 years old, while I was sitting over there as a tool of white supremacy in Saudi Arabia during the Gulf War. You know, that's how I describe my military service. I was a tool of white supremacy. And after reading his biography, I became less confused about what I was doing and how I was being used. And it was shortly thereafter, not even 6 months after I came back from the Gulf War, I was out the military and discouraged my children and any other young person I came across that expressed to me a desire to go into the United States military for college money or for job security. You know, I just shared my thoughts with them on that. Now, his birthday was May the 19th. And, you know, a lot of people were observing his birthday as they do every year and sharing his legacy. But what troubles me is when we only share certain parts of his life and we don't acknowledge the real life maturation of his views as he got more information, just like we hope that all human beings, you know, as they get more information, as they're exposed to more truth, that they would mature, you know, in their worldview. I particularly did not like the fact that people were using Malcolm X to attack the nonviolent philosophy of Martin Luther King. When, you know, of course, yeah, Malcolm X said what he said when he was in the NOI in attacking Dr. King. But once he left that organization, started his own organization, as he matured in his views, you know, he became closer, and I believe they would have developed a great friendship if both of them had been allowed to live. But, you know, Malcolm later said that, you know, we shouldn't be falling out with each other. And I'm going to read a direct quote that I shared, you know, on social media that he said about that. You know, people, and I was doing this in response to people using Malcolm X to attack Martin Luther King and the civil rights movement and what have you. But this is what Malcolm X said. He said, "Our people have made the mistake of confusing the methods with the objectives. As long as we agree on the objectives, we should never fall out with each other just because we believe in different methods or tactics or strategy. We have to keep in mind at all times that we are not fighting for separation. We are fighting for recognition as free humans in this society. I mean, just that one quote right there should tell you a lot about where Malcolm X was prior to his assassination. You know, a lot of people like to criticize the civil rights movement for its nonviolent strategy and tactics without acknowledging the reason MLK took that position. His desired goal was to show the brutality, to use media, and he talked about it, to use media because television was this new invention. It was still young back in those days, and you know, they wanted these unarmed black people to participate in these demonstrations and for it to be shown to the world the brutality of the oppressor in this country, much like we're seeing the brutality of the Israeli soldiers against the unarmed Palestinians that are engaging in the March of Return. Martin Luther King was not anti-gun. Personally, he owned firearms and he had armed guards. He was no fool. But he also did not believe, rightly or wrongly, it doesn't matter to me, but he did not believe that black people during that time could mount a successful armed rebellion. Now, I don't think that Malcolm X was clear was really clear on that, but he was clear on armed self-defense, okay? And so that's something I strongly believe in, is armed self-defense, that we must be able to protect our communities from those who would violently assault us. Who knows? I probably wouldn't be alive today if not for my own grandfather adopting that philosophy of self-defense. Not to say that Malcolm X influenced him or Robert F. Williams, who was also from this area, influenced him. As Malcolm X said, self-defense is common sense. It's intelligent, you know. And so, you know, when the Klan burnt a cross in our yard and likely would have set the house on fire, and my grandfather and my uncles came out with their rifles and shotguns and started blasting away on these terrorists, sending them fleeing for their lives in the night, who knows? You know, my mother's entire family could have been wiped out. And I wouldn't even be here to be on these airways speaking with you on this today. But the objective was the same. And that was the objective of Martin Luther King and Malcolm X was the same. And that was the recognition in this society of the human rights of black people. Okay? Now, again, and I shared this quote with the young man who told me that the Organization for African American Unity was a black separatist organization, and that Malcolm X was preaching black separatism during that period of his life. Clearly, he makes it plain that we have to keep in mind at all times that we are not fighting for separation. We are fighting for recognition as free humans in this society. Because you can separate. Look, we got separate black nations all over Africa. Did that save them from any oppression from the enemy? No, it did not. It did not. In fact, people would say, you know, that Africa's in a post-colonial period right now, and that, you know, all these nations have gained their independence. But no, they really have not. They are under a new form of colonialism, just like we're under a new form of slavery via the 13th Amendment here in the United States. Africa still suffers from neocolonialism. So simply separating yourself and going to a predominantly black nation is not a guarantee of an absence of mistreatment, okay? I mean, just look at all the wars that are being facilitated by white supremacist powers in getting Africans to go after each other, okay, in Africa, instead of uniting, which was the goal of, you know, many black leaders past, like Patrice Lumumba, you know, like even Muammar Gaddafi, even though he wasn't a black person or of African descent, he was a Berber, but he was still a pan-Africanist, as Libya is on the African continent. And it's just shameful that under a black president or CEO of the USA Inc., that nation was destroyed. And, you know, we now see images of open slave markets with black people put on auction blocks and what have you. So, again, you know, going off to Africa was not what Malcolm X was telling us to do. He was telling us to build bridges with our people who remain on the motherland continent, and also to build bridges with those in these other, you know, Caribbean nations, wherever black people were. So he wasn't fighting for separation. He was fighting for human rights prior to his assassination. Again, if you have any questions or comments, and I have to say, agreement is not necessary on this station. You can disagree all you want to. The only thing that we require is that we respect each other as we express our views. So again, if you have any questions or comments on the legacy and maturation of Malcolm X, you can give us a call at 704-802-5056. That's 704-802-5056. You know, and every year, and you know, I do it more than just on his birthday, but I particularly focus on his writings and his speeches and whatnot during the week of his birthday. And you know, I come across new material all the time. And so I, you know, again, speaking about, you know, people using the image of Malcolm X to put down another black man who gave his life on our behalf, you know, Malcolm X actually started sticking up for Dr. King. And I was not aware that he actually threatened some Nazis, white supremacists, you know, it's pretty much the same thing, Nazis and white supremacists, you know, and he actually threatened them if any harm came to Dr. King when he was in Alabama, that, you know, you're gonna have me and some other brothers to deal with. And this is a quote from him. This is, and he sent this as a direct message to George Lincoln Rockwell, the leader of the American Nazi Party. Rockwell was doing a hate bus tour of southern U.S. states in 1965. And in an interview, Malcolm X said this. He said, "This is to warn you that I am no longer held in check from fighting white supremacists by Elijah Muhammad's separatist black Muslim movement, and that if your present racist agitation against our people there in Alabama causes physical harm to Reverend King or any other black Americans who are only attempting to enjoy their rights as free human beings, that you and your Ku Klux Klan friends will be met with maximum physical retaliation from those of us who are not handcuffed by the disarming philosophy of nonviolence and who believe in asserting our right of self-defense by any means necessary." So while there is no doubt that there was a disagreement between Malcolm X and Martin Luther King on the issue of the strategy of nonviolence. As I read in his other quote, though, he said that we shouldn't, you know, he wasn't going to allow that to cause him to fall out with other people like Dr. King, whose objective was the same. And he even came to the defense of Dr. King, and it's just shameful to me. And we can chalk up some of it to ignorance. People just don't know. You know, they quit studying they quit studying Malcolm X after a certain point in time, and they didn't come to know that, you know, he became very supportive of Dr. King's goals, even if he didn't agree with the strategy of nonviolence. And, you know, this was not just the interview. He sent Lincoln Rockwell, the telegram via Western Union. A person by the name of Joe Barry posted this to my post on Facebook, where I posted that quote, and he posted some screenshots from another telegram that from a telegram that Malcolm X sent to Martin. And this was sent, let me see, what's the date here? Let me see if I can see the date. I don't see. January the 30th, 1964 at 12:03 p.m. This was a telegram sent to Dr. Martin Luther King by Malcolm X. He says, "We have been witnessing with great concern the vicious attacks of the white races against our poor, defenseless people there in St. Augustine." This was St. Augustine, Florida, where Dr. King was at the time. "If the federal government will not send troops to your aid, just say the word, and we will immediately dispatch some of our brothers there to organize self-defense units among our people. And the Ku Klux Klan will then receive a taste of its..." Give me just a moment, as it's two different images. Let me pull up the second image. I'm sorry, bear with me. I don't know why I did that. Let me see if I can get back to the right one. Yeah, here's the second part of the this telegram sent via Western Union by Malcolm X to Dr. King. He said, "We'll give the Ku Klux Klan a taste of their own medicine. The day of turning the other cheek to those brute beasts is over. The organization of African American Unity, Malcolm X, chairman." And he sent that from Harlem. So again, this was sent in 1964. So, you know, it's just not correct to use the image of Malcolm X to attack another freedom fighter like Dr. King simply because you didn't agree with his philosophy of nonviolence. Their goal was the same. And again, that what was that goal? Let me pull up another quote by Malcolm X. Okay, that's the wrong one. Y'all bear with me as I posted a lot. He said, this is what he said about the black struggle. He said, "It is incorrect to classify the revolt of the Negro as simply a radical conflict of black against white, or as purely an American problem. Rather, we are today seeing a global rebellion of the oppressed against the oppressor, the exploited against the exploiter." Okay, now again, this is part of the maturation process of Malcolm X once he left the United States and started traveling abroad and coming into contact with various people in Africa, as well as in the Muslim world. And, you know, he changed, I would say it was a radical change in his views in a very short time. Now, I have to say that is a sign of his greatness. Okay, that's a sign of a human being, and we're all flawed and we all have imperfections, and as Brother Jerry likes to say, I'm still learning. And this was him, you know, showing you that he still had a lot to learn, and he was not afraid to change his position based off of new information. All right. He began to identify with oppressed people all over the world, regardless of skin color, regardless of religion, regardless of, let's say, financial situations. And he said this: the only way we'll get freedom for ourselves is to identify ourselves with every oppressed people in the world. We are blood brothers to the people of Brazil, Venezuela, Haiti, Cuba. Yes, Cuba too. And some of you may have known about the meeting between Malcolm X and Fidel Castro there in Harlem when Fidel Castro traveled to New York to attend the United Nations conference or meeting. It escapes me, you know, exactly what it was, the function he was attending, but it was through the United Nations. And instead of Fidel Castro going to stay in the fancy white hotels and what have you, he went to Harlem. He went to Harlem and he stayed among black people, where he met up with Dr. King. I mean, excuse me, I don't know why I keep saying Dr. King, but he met up with Malcolm X. So again,
may I be heard?
Yes, let me just finish this quick comment and thank you for chiming in, and I'll come right to you. But again, I have seen people misuse and abuse Malcolm X, and I don't have to call out no names, but there is this well-known quote-unquote black nationalist who even attacked our revolutionary brother or ancestor now, since he's passed away, Fidel Castro, and saying that he was a white man and he was a Catholic and all of this and that, and just really attacked Fidel Castro for no other reason than, I feel like, for clickbait, you know. But then you want to take a picture of yourself posing like you Malcolm X, all right, playing on black folks' mind, using that symbology and what have you. But you are far removed from the stance that Malcolm X took towards Fidel Castro and the people of the revolutionary people of Cuba. I think that was, might have been Brother Ross, or it might have been Brother Jerry. I got my headphones on. Yeah, go ahead, Brother Jerry. Thank you for chiming in on this conversation. What's on your mind?
No worries. I have plenty of questions. And just to get those started off, like you said, the attacks on Martin Luther King by way of Malcolm X. When we watch the movie, because as I stated in Tando, a lot of us get our information either from watching movies, the news, or either other people. And that's still learning, I must confess. I kidnapped that from the brother. Look, now his name escapes me. Neely Fuller Jr. You know, I heard him say that, and it fit me so well. So that's my response, no matter what anybody asks me. That's all. That's my response. It's safe, and not only is it safe, but it's accurate, if you've been accurate with yourself. But the attacks on Martin Luther King by way of Malcolm X, I find that a lot of people, like you said, always say about the nonviolence and the maturation of Malcolm X when you made that quote about, I can't remember it verbatim, but just being able to, the tactics is not what we're after. It's the objective. And people get into their feelings about how you go about making your moves the same way that Malcolm, when they first got together, you know, that was an issue between them two. And people seem to forget that as he grew, that he began to understand why that tactic was being implemented. Now, how do you feel about not only people attacking Malcolm X, I mean, well, that some people do attack Malcolm X, but attacking Martin Luther King, but using those same type of tactics to attack other black people?
I feel like it's incorrect to attack anyone who is sincerely, because we have to realize, though, we do have people, and they've always been there, who seek to exploit us for their own personal gain or egoism or what have you. But again, you know, if their objective is our true liberation and recognition in a racist society that we are human beings and that we have inalienable rights, then you shouldn't be attacking that person. And, you know, unless you're attacking something that makes no sense, and if that strategy is going to get a bunch of us killed senselessly, and it's not going to advance the objective, that's the only time. No time should we be attacking people, but we should be, you know, attacking what is being said or what is being strategy. We should maybe attack. But we should be debating those strategies. But again, if this is a sincere person who has the best of his community or her community at heart, I don't see why we should be looking to tear them down again, unless they're engaged in some sort of fraud that's going to get us hurt or distract us from the objective. I don't know if that answered your question, but I answered it the best I could.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir, it did. One other question before you continue on. Now, when we run into these folks, from your own perspective, how should we handle those? Because I know where I'm from, certain things get said, certain actions are required. Not necessarily because they have to happen, but just the circumstances of if you don't react to them, you may receive those other type of instances. So how would you handle those type of situations?
Okay, let me restate the question, make sure I understand it, Jerry. So if, let's say, somebody's attacking me personally and my work through Black Talk Media Project, you know, if they have some valid questions and valid concerns that they're raising with me, then we should talk about it. Let's talk about it. Let's have some dialogue. Let's see if I can see where you're coming from, and I may be in error, or maybe you might see where you might be in error because you don't have all the information about what I'm trying to do. Maybe I'm not making public what my true objective is and why I'm employing a certain method. We should have that conversation if the person is, to use a cliche, you know, when we say that we just agree to disagree. We can be agreeable with each other we can be agreeable with each other while not at the same time agreeing on something. I probably butchered that, but you know, I'm just using language the best I know how. Now, if it's a person who's not being constructive, who is coming from a place of of evil and not a place of inquiry, then, you know, I simply just don't have anything to do with them. I cut them off. I don't, like Mr. Fuller said, no contact, no conflict. If we can't have a dialogue where we can resolve our differences and you want to still snipe at me or come on my timeline on social media and argue with me or be disrespectful to me, I ain't got a problem with you know, just taking Mr. Fuller's suggestion and just blocking you and not having any contact, because, I mean, it's logical. No contact, no conflict. Anything else?
Thank you, Scotty. That did answer my question, and it's minimize conflict to minimize contact to minimize conflict. You are correct. I will let you go ahead. Like I said, I have many questions, so I just try to.
Well, let's get Ross in here real quick. I only got, like, you know, maybe 10 more minutes, or I could stretch it out to 15 minutes. But let's get Ross in there. But Jerry, don't hesitate to get in, you know, the rest of your questions. I'll answer them to the best of my ability. Hey, Brother Ross, thank you for calling in to BTR News. What say you?
Peace, Brother Scotty. Great show. I love Brother Bob Lowe. I grew up listening to him since I was like 5. Like, seriously, he was on WLIB, so we were listening to him and Imhotep Gary Bird. I wish you would get him on here too, because he's another really wise brother too. It was great. And then I think what you're doing in regards to just dealing with the maturation of Malcolm X is great, because I don't think anybody's ever focused on his development past. Like you said, they just get to a certain stage and they just stop there. And I think this is a great great way to pay homage to him, as well as to just give people the honest truth. Now, what you were saying about this black male who took on the personage and an image of Minister Malcolm, but yet he's bashing Fidel Castro. You know, it's funny. Fidel wasn't perfect, but Fidel was about the work, you know, and I find that the people who have the most to say are people who've done the least. And to me, if you don't do anything, you can't complain. Keep your mouth shut unless you really putting in work. You know, this is a guy who sent troops over to Africa to help our brothers and sisters there facilitate their own liberation through violent conflict with the system of white supremacy. When have you done that? You know, this is a man who sent nurses all over the Caribbean to different islands that had shortages of nurses and serious problems with their healthcare systems, to train people on those islands to facilitate nursing programs so that they could actually start developing their medical systems, including the island.
As well as doctors, Ross.
You know what I'm saying?
Yes,
doctors as well. Matter of fact, if you watch Michael Moore, he has a documentary called Capitalism, A Love Story, and he actually takes about 20-something people that were all people who worked emergency services workers in 9/11 that were sick with all kinds of cancer and all kind of body ravaging diseases based on them being there during the cleanup process, who could not get any health care in the United States. They knew what they needed, but they couldn't afford it because the health care system is trash in the United States. And he took them on a boat to Cuba. And the most one of them spent for like a medicine that cost tens of thousands of dollars in the United States was $20. Most people's medicine cost 10, or they got it for free. And most of them were crying before they pulled off the island, because they were like, oh my goodness, it's amazing. And they were so nice, so caring. I mean, really into the health of the person. Some of them even learned better ways of caring for themselves than the crap they were getting from their doctors in the States. This is in little old Cuba, and Cuba has one of the best healthcare systems on the planet, and the United States does not. Don't let them fool you. They're just good at experimenting on people. But I just wanted to say that, you know. And another thing, there's a Yoruba priestess, a Santeria priestess by the name of Mihenny Whiplin. In one of her books, she talks about Fidel Castro. And she talks about the fact that he wasn't Catholic outwardly, but he practiced something called Lukumi, which is basically the Cuban version of Santeria, where they worship Yoruba deities in secret. And that his patron deity was Eshu, which is known as the road opener, or he's known as Anpu or Nipu in Kemet, the black jackal dog, the road opener. And he would wear his beads on his wrist, and he would cover them with multiple watches. That was the reason he would wear multiple watches. And he always said that it was Eshoo who helped him survive the over 365 attempts on his life by the CIA.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, all of the stuff that these people get out public and get out in public and say, they're speaking from a place of ignorance, and they really need to understand and get themselves educated, like really do some research. That's I mean, reading comprehension, listening comprehension, like just do your homework. And it's not hard to do in today's day and age. You just have to know that you get your information from reputable sources, but just do the work. Like you haven't done an inkling of anything that this man did, but you're bashing him. And he's literally done direct things to help black people globally that you have never done. I don't even know if you've gotten off your block. So, like, kill that. It's just ridiculous. And it's nauseating. So let me shut up and let you finish the program. But I've had to chime in on that because I'm just like, this is just this the kind of stuff that some of us are capable of saying, and we make ourselves look really, really ignorant. And, you know, these people are people that should get our maximum respect, regardless of what mistakes that they made.
Right.
They still did things. They put in the work, and that's what matters. What was the work, and was it sincere? And you can't look at the work Fidel Castro did and say that it wasn't sincere, because it speaks for itself, you know?
Yes, it does.
So I mute myself. Thank you.
Yes, it does. And before I go back to Brother Jerry for another one of his questions, I was attacked years ago. I'm sorry, I think I heard somebody. Okay. I was attacked years ago. This was, I think it was 2013, the last time, and this was during the Obama administration, when the last time the Israelis started murdering, not the last time, of course, you know, they're doing it right now, but prior to what's going on right now in 2013, the Israelis launched a offensive against the largely defenseless people of Gaza. I mean, they were bombing them and shooting them so much that they had to put in an emergency order to the Obama administration to rearm. And that was special legislation that the Obama administration got pushed through Congress just to rearm those Zionist terrorists, white supremacists. And I was standing, and I was just pointing out that this is wrong. This is incorrect. That this is murder. This is genocide. I had black people attack me for me writing about it or even giving any attention to it by saying, what have Arabs done for black people and all this and that. That kind of stuff, you know. And as to make it seem like that Palestinians have played a central role in the oppression of black people. Again, you know, I started studying Malcolm and exposing myself to his philosophy back when in my 20s. And I have started to implement that in my own life, you know, because I recognized the truth in what he was saying. So, you know, this is what Malcolm X had to say about it, because they was doing it during his time. But, and we talked a little bit about this during the Tando radio show. I think I mentioned it yesterday, and I mentioned it again today concerning the Zionist genocide against the Palestinians. And again, Palestinian is a nationality, okay? Do y'all know what a nationality is? That means that you a citizen of a nation. There are, and I shouldn't have had to do this, but back in 2013, I was pushing out videos from documentaries of black African Palestinians who lived there for thousands of years. Okay, so they always, you know, but you know, we always see the image of the Arabs and what have you, and we don't recognize that Palestinian is a nationality, it's not a race or ethnic group. All right. So this is what Malcolm X had to say about it. He said, and this speaks to the idolatry and the ignorance of people who call themselves Christians and say they believe in the Bible and it's the word of God. Well, Malcolm X had something to say about that. He said, did the Zionists have the legal or moral right to invade Arab Palestine uproot its citizens from their homes and seize all property for themselves just based on the religious claim that their forefathers lived there thousands of years ago. Only 1,000 years ago, the Moors lived in Spain. Would this give the Moors of today the legal and moral right to invade the Iberian Peninsula, drive out its Spanish citizens, and then set up a new Moroccan nation where Spain used to be, as the European Zionists have done to our Arab brothers and sisters in Palestine? In short, the Zionist argument to justify Israel's present occupation of Palestine has no intelligent or legal basis in history, not even in their own religion. Where is their Messiah? And that's a excerpt from an article. It was many more words that he spoke on this issue. It was published in the Egyptian newspaper back during the 60s. And so again, for these people to claim that they Bible scholars and what have you, and the Bible itself says that the nation of Israel shouldn't even exist because it was not the people, when I say Jewish people, I shouldn't even use the word Jewish. I should use the word Hebrew. The Hebrew people were being punished for their disobedience to God. This is according to the Bible. They were being punished for their disobedience to God, and they were scattered among all the nations. This is what the Bible says. And that they would not be a nation again until the return of the Messiah. Most Christians, especially Westerners, know this as the second coming of Christ. So that's in the Bible right there, that Israel as a nation should not exist. And it was funny, I started laughing, because also in that same piece, Malcolm X said, is Ralph Bunche the Messiah? Is that they Messiah, Ralph Bunche? For those that don't know who Ralph Bunche is, he is a ancestor of Barack Obama, a black man, who was very instrumental in the creation of the occupation of Palestine and the creation of this current nation known as Israel. So Malcolm was saying, is Ralph Bunche supposed to be our Messiah? Jerry, did you have any other questions or comments?
Yes. I would like for you to, I know it's getting late, so I'm going to end with this. I know that the legacy of Malcolm X is still withstanding, but what do you think about his organization that he created and the people who are leading it now? And with that being said, I put myself on mute. Thank you for your time, Scotty. Wonderful show.
Thank you, Jerry. As far as who's leading it now, I was under the impression that after Malcolm X was murdered, that without his charisma and his leadership and his ability to attract financial support and whatnot, that Dr. John Henry Clark, as I think his sister as well, tried to continue it, or one of his relatives tried to continue it, and it folded. So I'm not aware of the Organization for African American Unity's reformation, and if it has reformed, I'm just not aware or knowledgeable on who's leading it now. Perhaps you could educate me on that. Brother Jerry,
I'm sorry, I had put myself on mute. I'm not aware of the head leader, but it still operates and still has several chapters around the nation. Mm-hmm. And from what I have perceived from them, it has become similar to the NOI. And I was just wondering what you thought of that particular stance that's being taken, because it's a lot of what ends up happening is kind of like what we have in our own communities, to where if I'm not going with the ideology that you have, then I will attack you just as well as I will attack these white supremacists.
Mm-hmm. Well, if that's the case, and it is not being true to the spirit under which it was founded, and that spirit was not as a black separatist organization, but an organization to facilitate the unity of not only African Americans, but the African diaspora, and to build those bridges with African descendant people on the continent of Africa. His goal was not to create a separate black nation, but to unify us, to consolidate our power throughout the planet, to bring about the recognition and respect of our rights as free human beings. That is the spirit under which it was founded. And if somebody's doing something different with it, then I say shame on them for taking something that he created it and veering and turning it into something that he did not intend it to be. Does that answer the question?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir, it does. I find that a lot of us, and when I say us, of course, I mean us in the black community, I find that what ends up happening is, and I get this word from you, I always knew what a cult means, but I find that we have an occult following under one ideology, no matter what the stakes are or how wrong the person who's leading that particular group is, we will follow them because of small, minute interest that we have in particular situations. And we'll follow that all the way to the grave and ignore any and everything else that was said. But thank you for your time again, Brother Scott. I know you got to get out of here. So appreciate the platform that you have granted us and all that you do for us. You be strong, and hopefully we can help you out a lot more than we are already. Thank you.
All right. You're welcome, Brother Jerry. And thank you for your questions and comments tonight, as well as those from Brother Ross. And I also, again, want to thank Brother Bob Law and the work that he's doing in pointing out the very harmful impact that some of this rap music, not all of it, we still got brothers and sisters out there staying true to the principles of hip hop, which is peace, love, unity, and having fun. Those are the four pillars of hip hop, and who have distorted that and turned it into something else. Okay, so I want to thank Brother Bob Law and especially Brother Kwabena Rasuli, my longtime comrade in that area of that focusing on the harmful impact of media, who you know also brought me into paying more attention to that. So I'll just end it with this: Malcolm X said, "The media is the most powerful entity on the face of the planet. It can make the innocent look guilty, and it can make the guilty look innocent, and that's power." Thank you all again for tuning in to this broadcast of BTR News. It will be podcasted later, and thank you for your support of the Black Talk Media Project. Peace and blessings to all. Stay safe behind these global enemy lines that we live.